Have you ever found yourself typing, you know, a really specific, almost conversational question into a search bar?
Oh, absolutely.
And you just get back this like massive list of links you then have to dig through.
Yeah, page after page.
Yeah.
Or you're trying to get your head around something complex and it just feels overwhelming, right?
Totally. It's this common frustration, and it really points to, well, a big shift in how we're trying to find information online these days.
Mm-hmm. The old way, the keyword search engine, it's great for finding a website or a quick fact, but for those deep, sort of nuanced questions where you want an actual answer,
yeah,
maybe not so much.
Exactly. And that's precisely what we're diving into today. We're taking a really deep look at AI search, and specifically at one company that's making some serious waves, Perplexity AI.
Right.
Now, this isn't just another tech startup. They're lean, they're ambitious, founded by Aravind Srinivas, and they're basically daring to challenge the giants in a space dominated by, well, titans.
It's a bold move.
So our mission here is to kind of pull back the curtain. We want to explore how Perplexity is navigating this, why big names like Jeff Bezos are backing them, and maybe most importantly, what this AI search revolution could actually mean for you, the user.
And to do that, we're leaning heavily on a really fascinating interview with the founder, Aravind Srinivas himself. His journey, the company's strategy, his thoughts on the whole AI industry. It gives you this incredible inside look.
Okay, so let's start with the vision. What's Perplexity actually trying to do? Aravind talks about building unique experiences that were not possible before in search.
Yeah, he's not just aiming for a slightly better Google. It's more fundamental. Mm-hmm. He's thinking about a dedicated search app, a consumer application that gives you direct smart answers, not just links.
Moving beyond the 10 blue links.
Exactly. It's a big goal. And speaking of unique, the name Perplexity itself is kind of interesting.
All right. Where did that come from?
Well, it's actually a pretty geeky AI term. It's a metric that measures how well a language model predicts the next word. Basically, how confused it is.
Mm.
Lower perplexity is better understanding.
Huh. Okay, that's very techie.
It is. And the kicker, the domain name, perplexity.ai, was available for just $120.
You're kidding, $120?
Yep, true startup story.
That's amazing. But, I mean, Perplexity for a consumer product.
He knows. Aravind himself admits it's probably one of the worst names for something aimed at, you know, everyday people.
At least he's self-aware.
Totally. And he mentioned they're already thinking about maybe rebranding the product name later, even if the company stays Perplexity. Shows they're focused on what works for the user, not just attached to the name.
That adaptability, that focus, maybe that's part of why they've attracted such high-profile investors. Like Jeff Bezos, how did that happen?
Yeah, the Bezos story is pretty revealing. You'd wonder, right, how does this relatively small startup get his attention? So Aravind reached out via a mutual contact. Bezos' team, apparently true to form, asked for a memo. Standard practice.
Okay.
But Aravind didn't stop there. He also made this nice demo. Get this. It was an imaginary voice-to-voice system, and he somehow got Bezos' voice synthesized discussing Star Trek and Blue Origin.
Whoa. Okay, that's bold.
Audacious is the word. And yeah, it worked. Bezos approved the first investment without even meeting Aravind, just based on the memo and that demo.
No way.
Yeah. And crucially, Bezos let them use his name publicly. Aravind said that really helped build credibility early on. Massive vote of confidence.
I can imagine just having that name attached.
Huge. And it wasn't just a one-time check. Bezos apparently asked for regular updates, including those famous six-page memos.
Ah, the Amazon way.
Right. Aravind actually said it was a really good exercise forcing them to clarify their thinking. They met maybe two or three times after that, and Aravind mentioned Bezos was literally up to date with everything. So real engagement.
So why? Why Perplexity, do you think? From Aravind's perspective, what did Bezos see?
Well, Aravind's guess, and it sounds plausible, is multifaceted. First, he thinks the product just worked really well, especially back then. It had reliable web browsing when competitors, you know, early ChatGPT, Bard, Copilot, were sometimes unreliable or prone to making things up.
Okay, so differentiation was key.
Definitely. Plus, they already had good investors, the team moved fast, shipped quickly, and they were capital efficient.
Right.
But Aravind felt the core idea that really clicked with Bezos was this customer-focused AI company thesis. The idea that you, the user, shouldn't need to worry about which AI model is running underneath.
You just want the answer.
Exactly. Right. Just want the answer quickly and reliably. And that apparently resonated with Bezos' whole Amazon philosophy. Your profitability is not my concern. You get the package in a day. that relentless customer focus.
That makes a lot of sense. That user experience focus really sets the stage for their whole battle, or maybe competition, with Google.
Yeah, because how people use them is fundamentally different.
How so?
Think about your average Google search. It's often just, what, two or three words? Amazon, weather, latest movie times. You're navigating or getting a quick fact.
Sure.
But on Perplexity, Aravind says the median query is closer to 10 words. People are asking things like, how many times has Tendulkar scored 100 and India has lost the match? Really specific questions needing synthesized answers.
Right. You're not looking for a link farm there. You want the number.
Precisely. You want actual answers to questions. And that difference highlights Google's big challenge, what people call the innovator's dilemma.
Because of their ads.
Exactly. Their massive, incredibly profitable ad business is built on clicks from search results. If they start giving everyone direct AI answers, especially through things like AI overviews, that potentially competes with their ad business. It could reduce traffic to those paying links.
It's a tricky balancing act for them. Billions of users, billions in ad revenue.
Huge internal conflict. And that, Perplexity believes, creates their opening. Aravind sees this market for complex, answer-seeking queries just exploding, growing exponentially in the next 5 to 10 years.
So they're not trying to replace Google for everything, but own that specific growing niche.
That seems to be the strategy. Which leads to the question, what does beating Google even mean for them?
Yeah, it's not like they expect 90% market share tomorrow.
Right. Aravind was clear. It's not about destroying Google's stock price. Google has tons of other businesses. For Perplexity, winning looks more like capturing a really significant share of that answer-seeking market.
So significant that, what, like a whole generation starts using Perplexity first for those kinds of questions?
Yeah, or even, as he put it, that Google employees and their kids end up using Perplexity because, for certain tasks, it's a better product.
That's a bold metric of success.
It is. The big goal he mentioned, scaling from their current, say, 20 million daily queries up to 2 billion.
2 billion. Okay, that's Google scale.
It's aiming high. Now, context is important here. In terms of overall market share right now, especially web and mobile installs, ChatGPT is the clear winner.
Yeah.
No contest.
Sure.
And you've got Google's Gemini, Microsoft's Copilot, both with huge install bases too. Perplexity's angle seems to be aiming for number two in actual mobile usage, banking on better retention, meaning people stick with it once they try it.
Okay, so engagement over sheer numbers initially.
Seems like it.
Okay.
Which brings us to funding. This is crucial.
Right, the David versus Goliath aspect.
Totally. Perplexity has raised, what, maybe 800, 900 million total?
Which sounds like a lot.
It is, until you compare it to Google, sitting on over $100 billion in cash. Or OpenAI, which has raised maybe $20, $25 billion, but is supposedly burning through $5 billion a year.
The scale is just mind-boggling. How can Perplexity even compete?
Well, Aravind actually frames their relative lack of funding as an advantage in some ways. Lower bureaucracy, faster movement, lower distraction.
Less inertia.
Exactly. And the key strategic piece is not trying to build and train their own giant foundational AI models from scratch like Google or OpenAI are doing.
They use models from other companies.
Yeah, they leverage others' models. That's core to their capital efficiency. It lets them focus all their resources on the product, the user experience, and move much faster than maybe a giant company bogged down in model training and internal politics can.
Interesting. So efficiency becomes their weapon against raw financial power.
That's the bet. Especially when you see other huge players entering the field, like Elon Musk with XAI.
Right. XAI just raised, what, $6 billion?
$6 billion. And they're talking about spending maybe $5 billion of that just on building data centers with a million GPUs. Huge infrastructure play.
Does that worry Perplexity? I mean, that's serious firepower.
You'd think so, but Aravind's reaction was interesting. He said he's actually a fan of Elon, calls him an inspirational entrepreneur.
Right.
Yeah. His take is the market is just so massive, with so many verticals, finance, shopping, travel, news, sports, that another big player like Musk entering actually makes the whole market even bigger. It accelerates everything.
Hmm. Okay, so a rising tide lifts all boats kind of view?
Sort of. He acknowledged that capital and especially GPUs are somewhat zero-sum. There's only so many to go around.
Sure.
But again, it comes back to efficiency. If XAI is spending $5 billion just on the picks and shovels, the data centers, the chip's Perplexity, by not training its own base models, might have a surprisingly comparable amount to spend purely on product development and iteration each year. It levels the playing field a bit.
Gotcha. Spend smarter, not necessarily bigger. Now, something that always comes up with information platforms, especially search, is bias. Political neutrality. How does Perplexity approach that?
It's a super sensitive area, obviously. Ervin stated their aim is to be politically neutral and build from a clean slate.
Easier said than done, I imagine.
Definitely. He contrasted it with Google, which, you know, has faced accusations over the years about ranking bias. Things like the alleged Donald Duck autocomplete for Trump news searches or certain podcasts being hard to find.
I remember some of those controversies.
Right. Now, Google eventually shifted its public stance towards prioritizing delivering correct information, often driven, Ervin suggested, by practical capitalistic business needs like winning government contracts or operating in places like China.
Business realities?
Mm-hmm. Perplexity's position, as articulated by the founder, is basically that if they operate in different countries, they'll have to abide by their rules. It's an acknowledgement that being a global platform means navigating complex, sometimes conflicting regulations and expectations. Defining neutral or correct is the billion-dollar question, really.
Yeah, it's minefield. Okay, shifting gears a bit. When asked about the craziest AI conspiracy theory...
He mentioned the whole godlike AGI controlling the universe idea. Like, whoever builds it first becomes this all-powerful puppet master.
The sort of sci-fi trope.
Exactly. He doesn't really buy into that narrative, the idea of one person wanting to, you know, rule everything.
Okay, so what does he see as the real danger, if any, from superintelligence?
His perspective is actually, I think, more grounded and maybe more concerning in a practical sense. He thinks the real threat isn't some AI manipulating politicians Don villain style.
Right.
It's the risk of one country, or maybe one company, gaining an exclusive economic or military advantage from superintelligence.
How so?
Imagine, he said, a computer Einstein, an AI that could solve problems humans can't crack, like a really hard pharma challenge leading to a miracle drug. Or a breakthrough in energy or material science.
Okay.
The massive economic impact of that would be unbelievable if one nation gets that exclusively. Well, you can see how that could lead to huge geopolitical tensions. Other countries desperately wanting access, maybe trying to steal it. That kind of race, he thinks, is a more plausible route to conflict than a rogue AGI.
That's a sobering thought. More like an AI-fueled arms race, but for economic or scientific breakthroughs.
Pretty much. It shifts the focus from existential risk to sort of superpower competition risk.
Right. Okay, let's talk impact. What about businesses? Which ones does Ervin see benefiting most from AI, like Perplexity?
He gives some good examples. Software development, for instance. Independent coders, consultants doing gigs. They can just do a lot more now per unit time. Big productivity boost.
Makes sense.
Healthcare, too. Think AI advisors, smarter agents connecting you to doctors, AI helping audit reports for accuracy, and financial consulting.
How would that work?
AI analyzing your portfolio, scanning news constantly, reading dense bank reports, providing tailored investment advice. Things that used to require expensive human advisors could become much more accessible. Democratizing expertise, essentially.
Okay, so potential boost for consultants, healthcare access, personal finance. What about the flip side? Which areas face disruption?
He mentioned large software consulting firms, the big dev shops. If smaller teams or individuals become much more productive with AI tools, the reliance on massive outsourced teams might decrease.
Interesting.
And the obvious one, customer support, call centers, human voice agents. AI is getting remarkably good at handling those interactions.
Yeah.
That sector could see major changes.
Yeah, you can already see that happening. It's fascinating, though, how sometimes the most unexpected uses pop up. He shared an anecdote about a bizarre search query, right?
Oh, yeah. This one was great. Someone searched for something like, I want my face protected. I still want to be able to breathe, but it should cover my nose and holes for my eyes. And I want to bike in the winter for Thanksgiving. Help me figure out which city I can go to and what I should buy.
Chuckles. That is incredibly specific and niche.
Right. It sounds almost like a joke query. But the amazing part, Perplexity apparently gave a really nice product recommendation, presumably some kind of specialized winter biking mask, and the person actually bought it.
Wow. So it went from this weirdly detailed request to a successful e-commerce transaction.
Exactly. It shows how these AI systems can go beyond just finding facts to actually solving complex, real-world, even slightly odd, user problems.
That's pretty cool. But that reliance, that ability to just ask anything, it does lead to this other concern, doesn't it? This idea of digital amnesia.
Yeah, that's a big one. Are we becoming so reliant on AI for information that we're losing our ability to remember basic stuff? Phone numbers, directions, maybe even core knowledge?
I mean, I barely know anyone's phone number anymore. And driving somewhere new without Google Maps, forget it.
Exactly. The analogy he used was maps reducing our need to remember physical routes. It's convenient, sure, but does it atrophy that part of our brain?
So the big question is, will AI free up our minds for, you know, higher level thinking, creativity, complex problem solving?
That's a hope.
Or will that freed up capacity just go unutilized? Will we, over generations, actually see a decline in certain cognitive abilities because we've outsourced them?
It's the multi-trillion dollar question, isn't it? The hope versus the worry. We just don't know yet how this grand experiment plays out long term.
A bit unsettling, really. Okay, finally, let's touch on India specifically. Aravind mentioned some interesting stats there.
Yeah, really striking. He cited data showing India has an incredibly high AI adoption rate among knowledge workers, something like 92%, compared to a global average of maybe 65%.
92%. That's huge. So the population there is really embracing these tools.
Seems like it. Very acclimatized, as he put it. But he also pointed out key challenges for India and really for any country looking to capitalize on AI.
Which are?
First, how do you move beyond just using AI for, like, productivity hacks? Mm. How does it help people actually earn more? Through new kinds of side gigs or creating entirely new types of value, ultimately boosting average income and GDP.
So translating usage into real economic uplift.
Exactly. And second, related to that, how do you foster the creation of new AI-powered businesses, mm-hmm. startups, building all applications, creating new market caps from nothing,
yeah.
generating new jobs. It's about building that whole ecosystem.
From adoption to innovation and economic growth.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So wrapping this up, it feels like we've covered a lot of ground. The rise of this answer-focused AI, Perplexity's specific strategy battling giants, the kind of surprising reasons behind big investments like Bezos's.
Mm-hmm. And those broader societal questions, too. Job impacts, political neutrality challenges, even the potential changes to how our own brains work with this technology.
It really is a profound transformation underway, not just changing how we search, but potentially how we think and work.
Definitely. And maybe that leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener, to ponder. As AI keeps getting better, keeps taking more of the mental load off our shoulders, what are we going to do with that freed up brain power?
Right. What new problems, what new creative endeavors will humans tackle when the basics are handled by AI? And how will that choice shape what the next generation and the one after that looks like?
The big question. What do we become when our tools become this intelligent?